Welcome to We Love No Other, podcast from IlliniBoarder.com, coming to you live from the airport. And I only say that because if you hear like a flight announcement in the background, that's why. Really excited about this podcast. Really love this interview. And of course, I have to preface it basically with I'm an idiot. I almost screwed up the audio. I just spent 3 hours recovering it, and I think I got there. I recorded it a different way because we recorded this on Zoom, and I was trying to use a microphone to get better audio on my end, and I had the mic turned down to basically, let's say, a volume of 1.5 out of 100. So I had to go into the audio, which was recorded together, and peel off my little pieces and try and crank the audio up so you can hear me. I think I got there. There's going to be a couple times where he and I are both talking at the same time and you can't hear me, but doesn't matter because his words are the good ones. So I just wanted to tell you, because you might be bothered by it a little bit. It's like, what's happening here? Why when they're talking together, can I barely hear him? Because I had to crank the audio all the way up when I was talking and all the way back down when he was talking. But I still love every ounce of this, and I'm so glad I got the audio. At first, I thought I might have screwed the whole thing up, and I was ready to... I don't know what I was ready to do. So I say that because I needed to preface this in case you get annoyed when listening, but please just listen to his words. This is Talon Lipsey, senior walk-on put on scholarship this fall. One of my favorite conversations ever. Here you go. My guest today is Illini senior Talon Lipsey. You may have heard some of his story. We're going to go through the whole thing here, but first, Talon, how you doing? How's your day going? How's life?
I'm doing good. You know, then woke up this morning, enjoying the weather. It's not too cold here, so definitely thankful for that. But I'm doing awesome today.
All right, for people who don't know your story, let's just go all the way back. You know, I see that question like in, gosh, it was. When were you put on scholarship? Like April. Like that, when you did that Zoom call and you told your whole story. So if you don't mind,
yes, sir.
Let's start with MoBAP. So, you know, I'm originally from St. Louis, and my sons went to CBC High School, so I'm very familiar.
Okay.
With MoBAP, just, you know, shares a fence with MoBAP there. So, I'm familiar, and I'm familiar how they had started a new football program and they've built that new stadium now and all this kind of stuff. So how, you know, for somebody from Maryland, how are you finding MoBAP when you're coming out of high school?
So it's actually crazy. I moved around a lot. So I actually played high school ball in South Carolina. That's where I went to high school, middle school and high school at. And my senior year of high school, didn't really get a lot of offers because I only played 1 year of high school football. So they were the one school that offered me early on, and by the time signing day came around, that was the only offer I had and signed. Some other schools called after that, but that was up to that point, that was the only school I had. So signed there, went there, and it was just a completely different life than I was used to, in terms of the school was a lot smaller. It was about 800 people there. My high school had 1,700, so it was like kind of going backwards for me, what I felt like, as well as just the life I was living there wasn't what I saw for myself as an individual. And there was just a lot of trouble that I could have got into. And I decided I wanted to take another route with my life and not go there. So that was kind of part of what sparked the idea to transfer, as well as I changed my major. And it was kind of once I found out they didn't have the program at the school that I wanted, it was kind of a no-brainer. I was like, I got to get out of here. So leaving that fall or that spring, I go home and had a job working at a daycare, and I had contacted a trainer before I got back home. And yeah, that kind of started that whole process of me, like, I was working work I I actually ended up getting two jobs. So I had the job at daycare, then I went and got a job as a dishwasher as well. But I started training every morning. I would get up at 6 a.m., email coaches until about 6:30, 6:45. And then I would go to drive about 30 minutes, go train until about noon, 12:30, around then. Then I come back home, shower, grab food, go to work, and I'll be working from around 1:30 p.m. until about 2:30 a.m. the next morning. So I did that every day that whole summer. And in that process, as I was researching schools and emailing coaches, Illinois just really stuck out to me. Trying to come here, so I contacted them. They were one of the few schools that were on my list every single day that I contacted, every single day. So didn't really hear anything back. Ended up finding out camp dates, so I just showed up here one day. Drove all the way from South Carolina to St. Louis, packed up my apartment, and put all my stuff in my car and drove here. So I got here, and first thing I did was find a football facility, and then went and was just trying to get an opportunity to try out. So definitely faced a lot of adversity there, had a lot of obstacles come up in that process, but ended up getting an opportunity to try out, and then it's history from there. You know, I've been on the team for 4 years now, so.
So that was been great. Summer of 2018.
Yep.
When you were doing that, so I guess the Smith Center wasn't built yet. So were you?
No. When I got here, it was they actually had just signed the last beam for the structure.
Oh, okay. I remember that.
Yeah. So that was. Yep, that was when I got here.
Okay. So how did you get in front of Coach Smith's staff then? Like you said, you had been emailing. I'm guessing you were emailing some of the guys in the recruiting office and things like that. How did you, were you knocking on the door of the, what used to be the football facility there in the northeast corner? Or were you, what were you doing to get in front of them?
So it was crazy to – initially to get in the office, actually the doors were locked and everything. And I walked up and I just asked one of the maintenance guys, I was like, hey, where's the football facility at? He's like, oh, it's over there. He's like, oh, you matter of fact, I'll take you down there. He's like, where are you trying to go? I was like, to talk to the coach. He's like, okay. He came, unlocked the door for me, let me in the building. So hopefully, nobody fires that man, because I appreciate him for let me in, because wouldn't be where I'm at now. But, yeah, so I got in the building that way, and then that was how I initially had the first conversation with them.
I remember that hallway. There was like the academic stuff right there. Did mm-hmm. you go all the way down to the end of like where the coach's office were, or where did?
Yeah, so I had walked. I walked in, and the first I talked to the lady that was at the desk, and she told me where the DB coach's office was. And then I walked straight to his office, and then that was the first person I talked to. And then he made me go sit in the front. You remember that seating area over there? He had me go sit in that area. I was waiting for like 30 minutes for someone to come. And then someone came and they worked in recruiting. I can't remember his name, but he came in and talked to me. And then he was kind of like, yeah, the tryout dates aren't until September 6th. And I was like, yeah, well, it is July. It was like July 29th, July 30th at the time. I was like, yeah, that's not going to work for me. Is there a way I can at least come to practice? Because I have nowhere to stay, like nowhere to go. I came up here for this, And he kind of was like, nah, not really. Like, I don't know what to tell you. And so, definitely that was going through that, having those conversations. And you could tell, like, you had a lot of people that are kind of like, yeah, bro, just get out the office, And it's kind of puts a lot of doubt in your mind. But throughout the whole process, God had me. And then he brought someone in, Trey Stalling, that actually – was the one that really told me. He was like, go, come to practice every day, stay there. If they tell you leave, tell them I told you to be there. He just kind of fought for me to get an opportunity. So when trial dates were put out, he actually personally reached out to me to make sure I got them. So trial dates actually weren't until after the first three games. It was like September 6th. So they had played three games up to that point. And I went to all three of those games. It was Kansas State, I believe, or Kent State, Western Illinois, and then they went up to play USF at Soldier Field, and I drove to Chicago for that game too. So I went to all three games just because that's how bad I wanted to be on the team. It was like,
so you just bought a ticket for all three?
Yeah, I bought tickets for all three. All
three games.
For all three games. Yeah. Right. It was my like way of like manifesting that I was already going to be there. You know, like that I was supposed to be on the field traveling with the team. So I was like, until I'm on this team, I'm going to travel to every game. That was just my mindset. So it worked out, you know. It was just for me, like I said, that was like my act of faith for and just keeping that confidence and that belief in everything that was going on, that was going to work out. So it was awesome. But yeah, that camp, the coaches saw me because I would work out before they start practicing. I would get out there about 5:30 a.m. And I'd just work out for 2 hours until they got out there to practice. And then I'd come walk over and watch them practice.
So you're working out in the fields there to the east of the stadium. Is that where you're working out, or where were you working out to where they could see you?
Yeah. So you know how those gates are over there, those rec fields over there.
Yeah.
That's where they practiced at, but those gates would be locked at the time. So there was a field right outside of those gates.
Yep.
I worked out right there. They, a lot of people play soccer and stuff over there and lacrosse and stuff. That's the field I would work out on.
Sports are over there and all that stuff.
Okay. Yep. I would work out right there.
Doing your back pedal drills and your mm-hmm. everything your trainer that summer had been going through with you.
And yep.
Just trying to get noticed, basically.
Well, for me, it wasn't even about getting noticed. It was more just staying sharp. So by the time I got the opportunity, you know, I was prepared, and I just had been getting up. I had a routine at that point where I had been getting up that early and would work out. So it was kind of like I was going to keep that same routine and wasn't going to let that like break. And then, you know, I start slacking off or anything. So I just kept the same routine every day.
And how many nights, like I know when you got to Champaign, you know, the story mm-hmm. you told before that you were sleeping in your car for a while. How many
yeah.
nights did you sleep in the car before you found somewhere to stay?
It was like, I know at least it was about 8 nights. Honestly, I couldn't tell you like exactly. It was between eight nights to like 12 nights around there. Cause there was a few nights where I stayed at an Airbnb in between that time until like towards the end of that, before I went and stayed with my teammate, Deontay Cox. I had got an Airbnb and then I met the owner and then I would help him. I stayed there for like 3 nights and I helped him do some work in the property. He let me stay for like a couple free nights because I did work exchange. So he's awesome too. He's awesome. He owns the house on the corner of Armory and Fourth. So it was, he was a great guy, Brad. Definitely appreciate him for that. But then I ended up going to stay with my former teammate at MoBAP, Deontay Cox. And so, yeah.
Got it. Okay. So when did you officially get the offer to walk on, and, you know, how did that process go?
Yeah. So it actually wasn't an offer. It really was, they called me. He was like, hey, look, this is the tryout date. And show up at this time. This is going to be the time. It's from this point to this point. They didn't really give us like what we would be doing. He just was like, it's going to measure your conditioning, speed, agility, stuff like that. But it really wasn't like, hey, we're going to do X, Y, Z. So I showed up. It was actually held in Irwin Indoor Facility. So I showed up to the tryout like 2 hours early and just went through a routine to get my mind right and then warm up. And then by the time everybody got there, there was about 60-ish people there. And only at the end of the tryout, they kind of were like, you know, we'll give everybody a call, let you know who made it, who didn't. But by next Tuesday, I want to say that was like a Wednesday or Thursday. They were like, by next Tuesday, you'll know if you're on the team or not. So I was actually in the dining hall eating it, and they called me right before I was supposed to go to my class. They're like, hey, you got time to come to the facility today. You made the team. Congratulations. So it was, you know, it was definitely a great experience. Only 4 out of the 60 people made the team. And only 2 of us went through our eligibility. Connor Lillig was the other walk-on that stayed throughout the rest of his eligibility. And he ended up stopped. This last year was his last year playing. So, you know, looking at that, it's crazy to just everything, you know, going from not being on a team, not even having any interest to getting to go to a trial where it was four out of 60 of us made the team. And then looking where I'm at now, I'm the only one left and I'm the only one that earned a scholarship. So it's a blessing, you know, to be able to look back on all of that.
When did you do, I guess, so when you came that July, when did you mm-hmm. do the admissions process? Like, when
did you I did that way before I even got here. So that was, I got accepted into school July 9th. Yeah, July 9th, because the day I got accepted was the same day I told my parents I made the decision I was going to come here. Mm-hmm. So that was like, I had did some research and went through the application process and wasn't supposed to be able to apply. But then there was like a link that was like potential waiver to apply for late admission. And found that link and it was like real small, like, you know how you go on websites like fine print, and yeah, it was like right there and it was highlighted blue, and I clicked that link, submitted that application, heard back that I was approved to apply. Then I applied, was supposed to hear back in 2 weeks, found out the next day I got accepted. So everything was just falling into place.
Got it. So then what was that fall like for you of, you know, once you were on and mm-hmm. you're kind of joining midstream there kind of thing. So what, you know, what, just take me through what I guess that's fall of 2018, what that was like for you.
Yeah, it definitely was different because you're going from a small NAIA school to a big Division I program in the Big Ten. And I go from a school where I was the starter. I was like, essentially, I was the man there to come in here, and I'm like, nobody, you know? And then on top of that, because of transfer rules, I wasn't even eligible to play. So I couldn't go. I mean, like home games, I was on the sideline, but away games, you're not traveling, you know? And you're kind of like, hey, trying to learn the plays. And coaches are like, hey, we're in the middle of the season. Like, we ain't got time to be teaching you the plays. Like, figure it out as we go along. So that was kind of, it was definitely difficult. It was hard. But I knew I signed up for this, you know, and everything I had been through up to that point wasn't going to stop me from trying to become the best football player I could be and find out ways to help the team. So I really just used whatever time I had to help the team out and as a look player, you know, throughout special teams, throughout defense, whatever. You know, at the time they told me, they was like, we might need you at wide receiver and on defense for the scout teams. But I think I played wide receiver for like one practice and then the rest of it was defense. But just try to give the team the best look as possible to help us go out and do what we had to do every week. So, you know, you kind of find your role and find your niche and then understand, like, it'll be a time when you'll have the opportunity to play or show coaches that you'll have the opportunity to play. So just kind of kept myself focused on that.
So if I remember correctly, the first game you appeared in was last season. Is that correct?
Yes. Yes.
Was it the Penn State game? Am I remembering that right?
I can't. I played a couple plays Northwestern, but Penn State was the first time I got a rep on special teams. Yeah.
Got it. So let's go to that Northwestern game then. So, you know, you worked up from walk on and this and that, 2018, 2019, 2020 comes along and you get a chance to get in the game. What was that moment like for you?
I'm not going to lie. I was disappointed because I did not play up to my potential at all. Because I got thrown in. Didn't know I was going to be thrown in. I was prepared in terms of understanding the schemes. But they were like, yeah, you're going in the game. And I was just like, oh, snap. You know, like, so I was definitely shocked at first. Ended up missing the tackle the first play. I was so mad at myself, but I realized this, it happens, you know, like, all right, I got that out of my system. Now just calm down and play football, you know? So the rest of that game went, we lost, but I definitely was able to step it up a little bit and just calm down and get all the jitters out, you know? So Then I got that. I got one play in the Penn State game, and just my whole goal when I got in, we were losing. It was the last punt of the game. He was like, "All right, put Taylon in," and I just wanted to show whoever was going to be here that for this season that I can help the team out. So I made sure I won my matchup at Gunner, got down the field, peeled out the way, and because the returner caught the ball, fair caught the ball. So, but it was really just for me, just putting it on tape that I have ability, whether you see it in this one play or 50 plays, that I have a ability to give me an opportunity. So,
I'm trying to remember what game it was when Connor Lillard got in there and almost scored. Like, he got to like.
I want to say that was Rutgers. I think it was Rutgers. Yeah, it was. I know it was a home game.
Yeah, what was that like for you? You know,
it was awesome. It was awesome.
The guy you went to tryouts with and had been, you know, on with for so long.
It was awesome. I definitely celebrated hard with him. I was like, bro, I wish you would have scored that. Like, everybody would have went crazy if you would have scored. But he was a guy that showed up and worked every day. So I was really happy for him to get that opportunity. And he looked good too, honestly. He was out there doing his thing. So
yeah. It's probably one thing that fans don't fully understand of how much work a lot of these walk-ons put in.
You know, yeah, they don't.
For nothing on Saturdays, basically. You know, a lot of them just have a scout team career where they are the opposing cornerback each week and they never get on the field, and they just, you know, fulfill that role and they do it paying their own way and everything else. So it is, you know, it's a rougher life than people even – than I can even imagine, you know, talking to you about it. So then let's get to, you know, that day at Penn State, you know, basically the new coach is there. Coach Bielma's there. He had, you know, flown in from New Jersey and had come. So did you have a meeting with him after that? Did you have like a one-on-one, like, hey, I want to stick around? Like, what was your first introduction to Coach Bielma?
So I'm going to actually rewind a little bit, because after that season, I had sustained a back injury that at the end of that season. So I actually missed a couple games before the Northwestern game. And I wasn't even sure if I was going to be able to play football anymore, because I had a bill that fall semester, and I had saved up some money and paid some of the bill off, but I still had like $4,000 in my bill. And my graduation gift from my parents was they gave me the rest of the money to pay off the bill. And I saved up some money and gave that to me to pay off the bill. So coming into the spring, I was like, I don't even know if I'm going to be able to play, because I owed like $10,000. I had this back injury, and I just wasn't sure where it was going to go. I didn't know if I was going to be playing. So I went to the meeting just open. I was like, I don't know if I'm going to transfer. I don't know if I'm going to stay. If I'm going to play football, I have no idea what I'm going to do. And I just prayed about it like the night before we had the team meeting, and I walked in there and the first thing he said was, anybody that's here, I want you to come back. I'm not going to force you to leave. Anybody that wants to stay, I'm not going to force you to leave. You, everybody, walk on, scholarship, senior, freshman, whatever you are, you'll have the opportunity to stay here if you would like to stay. And then he talked about his story of being a walk on and just shared a little bit about himself. And for me, that was like, okay, this is somebody that is going to give me an opportunity, a fair opportunity, I felt like, to just show what I could do, you know. And I still have this dream of playing college football, and I felt like I hadn't fulfilled that yet. I've been a part of a college football team, but I haven't really played. So, I prayed about it. And then when I went in there and had that conversation, he had that conversation with us. It was like, for me, I was like, all right, I'm coming back. I'm going to give it one last try and see, you know, if I earn a scholarship this spring, I'll keep playing. If I don't, then I'll drop out of school and I'm done. I already had graduated, so I have my degree. It's not like I'm walking away from school completely, you know? So that day after that team meeting, me and him did have a brief conversation. And I actually had my daughter with me, and he just was like, you know, I see you're here as a senior, you know, if you want to come back, I would more than love if you came back. And he was like, you know, I'm all about everybody coming back and just, you know, we'll see what we can do. So I looked him in his eyes. I thought I was going to come back. So I did, you know, and just dedicated that whole semester really to trying to do whatever was best for my family. And that was, I felt like trying to fight for a scholarship and then ended up getting that in the spring. So.
And what was that moment like? I mean, we've seen videos of, you know,
yeah,
the announcement and everything else.
No, it was awesome. It was awesome. Definitely emotional. Just thinking back through everything I've been through, you know, from college, even just from being a 3-year-old that dreamed about playing college sports to everything, you know, just you, all those things you think about in that moment, thinking about those conversations, I told my mom, I'm gonna go to school and you're not gonna have to pay, y'all not gonna have to pay for it. And that becoming a reality, you know? And so that all was like, it was very emotional for me. It hit, but it was awesome at the same time. And like I told y'all before, that was the best night of sleep I ever got, you know? Yep. So.
Yeah. And what was the conference? Did you call your mom and say?
No, they were actually in town. They were all in town. My dad, my mom, my sister, everybody was in town. They were at the apartment. So when I got home, I actually walked in. It was, oh, how was practice? I was like, oh, yeah, it was good. I got put on full scholarship. And they were like, what? You know, put on scholarship? You know, so it was definitely awesome for that weekend to be the time that I got it, because they were in town, you know, to be able to actually share that with all of them. So,
yeah, yeah. Okay, so then let's go to this summer. You're coming back. You have – your first camp here in the fall with Coach Roma. Mm-hmm. You're getting prepped. What's your approach to this kind of bonus season, this final season here? You know, what was your mentality going into this season?
Just giving my all, put everything in, you know, don't hold back, you know, whatever the team needs, be that for the team. Whether that's on defense, special teams, however I can help the team, that's my goal. And this season has definitely been a lot of special teams in. So, you know, a lot of people, they come to college and they're like, I want to play college sports. And they feel like, oh, that means being the star all the time. And not everybody can be the star. And I realized that, not that I don't have the ability to, but right now there's people that are, they're playing on another level. You know, all our defense is balling, you know, and I'm not getting a lot of reps there, and that's fine. So how else can I help the team? Where can I be a star in a sense, you know, and special team has become that for me. Like my goal every day at practice is to be the best special teams player in the country, not just on our team, but in the country. Cause if I can do that, you know, then I'll always give our team a chance, you know, like those guys play their heart out every snap. Our defense plays their heart out every snap. Our offense plays their heart out every snap. So it's who would I be to go out there and not give them my all, you know? So it's like, how can I give the team a fighting chance if we have a close game, or if it's a blowout, whatever. How can I give the team a fighting chance? And that's what I've kind of seen my role to be this season. And I'm trying to really like embrace that and get other guys to start embracing it too. And I feel like we have a lot of guys that are embracing it. I mean, taking it seriously, because they're starting to understand the importance of all three phases of the game. You know, it's not just a defensive sport or offensive sport, or it's a special team sport. It's a team sport.
Yep. Okay, so I'm gonna brag on you here a little bit. I'm gonna tell the story of both Penn State and Minnesota. I know you're a humble guy. I know you're gonna probably try to deflect and say, you know, credit your teammates, but I'm gonna push it back towards you. So I hope you don't get too uncomfortable with the spotlight. So, end of the Penn State game. Penn State has to punt with a minute, less than a minute, like 30 seconds left.
43, I think, actually. Uh-huh.
And you're on the punt team out there. The returner is Donnie Navarro. He's standing about at his 10 and just kind of whiffs, comes off his fingertips, might have hit his foot. I'm not sure if it hit both his hand and his foot, but basically a muffed punt. So let me just set the scenario here. It's tied 10-10. Penn State is punting. Navarro is basically going to fair catch this thing. Illinois is going to take a knee. It's going to overtime because Illinois is not going to probably attempt to score from the 5 or something, but it's a muff punt. But you're there, you're Johnny on the spot, and you fall on the fumble. And Illinois does get to overtime, and Illinois does win the game. If you do not pick up this fumble, Penn State is now at the 5 and could just basically kick the game, just kneel on it till there's 2 seconds left, kick the game-winning field goal, game's over, doesn't even go to overtime. So, you know, I tweeted at the time that if Illinois wins this game, it's to play the game. And just think of the story of when you were, you know, and I'm going to Illinois and I'm sleeping in my car and I'm going to just walk into the football offices and I'm going to do whatever I can to get on the team. You know, that determination, that moment leads all the way to you making a single play that more or less allowed Illinois to win the game. So did you, I want to talk about the play, but I want to talk about like the impact of it. Like, did you realize that? Like, did it hit you that like, gosh, if I don't grab that fumble, we lose, you know? Like, did you realize that at the moment, or was it just like, hey, middle of the game, it's gonna be overtime, we gotta go, we gotta figure that, we gotta still win? Are you still in game mode?
A little bit of both. Like, obviously, because you know the situation. So when I went out on the field, I knew the situation, and I actually was in position just because I was doing my job. That's what my job was, to run down the field with the guy, and because it was a sky situation, not go inside the 15-yard line and be 10 yards away from Donnie and be looking at him just in case that were to happen. And it just happened that my job was called upon, and I did my job to the best of my ability. So every time we go out there, before we go on the field, I look at Donnie and let him know, like, hey, no matter what happened, we got your back. Whether you return this ball, you know, I'm going to be blocking my guy until you score or you go down, whatever. Or if you muff this ball, I'm going to be there to help you out, you know. But at the end of the day, it's like we all have each other's back. And that was just my time where I got called upon to have the team's back, you know, because the ball is the most important thing in the program. Whoever has that ball is carrying the program. So at that moment, it was, you definitely, you know, it's like you realize how big the moment is. And it's like, man, yeah, like that game could be completely different if I didn't grab it. But I was just doing my job, you know, and it was nothing special. Like, it was for me, it wasn't like it was anything special. It was just my team. We done fought this whole time, and we got an opportunity. I got an opportunity to make a play. I'm gonna make the play so we can have another chance to fight, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, there's probably no better example of all three phases kind of a thing that, mm-hmm. you know, one single play on special teams can just, you know, would have, had you not grabbed the fumble, would have determined the outcome of the game. So you're right. Saying you were basically doing your due diligence, you know, obviously, you know, guys on the punt team can't be close to Donnie in case, you know, they don't want the ball to deflect off of them. So you're trying to A, stay 10 yards away, and B, watch for a muffed punt. Is that's basically what your mentality was?
Exactly. Yeah.
And then you saw it, sprinted to it, picked it up, and Illinois kneels it out, wins in overtime. So now I want to fast forward to Minnesota, kind of a similar situation. This time Illinois is punting. You're the gunner. I believe you were gunner on that side when you downed
yeah.
the punt at the one. Okay. So you're gunner. You know what the play, everybody in the stadium knows what the play is. Blake Hayes is going to try to hit the pitching wedge punt that'll check up at the 5, and somebody's got to down it at the 1. So walk me through this entire play. Cause again, mm-hmm. this game, you know, it's still within a touchdown. Illinois has to punt. Best thing you can do is pin them at the 1 and make them go 99 yards to try to win the game, which they weren't able to do. And it's really, really big to get that punt pinned at the 1. So walk me through your entire thing to, you know, watch for the bounce, to get behind it, the spot, what you and Blake talked about. You know, tell me about that entire play.
Well, first off, I want to start by saying Blake, in my opinion, Blake is the best punter in the nation. So it's a lot of trust in him coming out there. We knew the situation. And Blake actually looked at me. He was like, just like practice. I was like, just like practice. So we do that in practice all the time, you know. And when I went, I know where he typically puts the ball at when he kicks to his right versus his left. And when we call certain calls, and we've kind of got a feel for each other in that sense. So when I was running down the field, I just made sure I was in a spot where I knew I could wrap back around. And if the ball got a high bounce, I could not try to knock it back in. But ultimately I had to just get to, it was more like a race to the goal line, you know? I had to get there before the ball got there. So, inside released on the guy to try to get him to stem off my pass. So I had more room to get back outside. And then, I just did my job, peeked the returner, peeked the ball, saw where the ball was going to bounce, and then got my butt to the goal line and stopped the ball from going in. So
that's great. So, I mean, I'm curious what your, I don't know, so much hard work to get to this point. What were these two road wins like for you when in both road wins in the final minute you made a play in both games? I mean, you know, you mentioned earlier, you know, age 3, you were telling, you know, age 10, you're telling people you're going to play college football. Here you are on the road at Penn State and at Minnesota, contributing to the game, and one of them basically determining the outcome of the game.
Mm-hmm.
What is that, you know, what is it like to chase something your entire life and then achieve it after mountains and mountains of hard work? I'm just, you know, I don't think I've ever done something like that of like, I've had this goal and it took 20 years to get there. And you know, this, like, what's it like for you? Like, really, what's it like to contribute on that level in these college football games like you'd always dreamed about?
It's awesome. I definitely, like, I'd be lying if I say, so you don't have moments where you think about that, like, man, like, we're here. But at the same time, I kind of check myself because I never want to become complacent, you know, and never let, like, oh, I made this great play and, you know, or I saved this game or et cetera. Like, my whole thing is I'm just doing my job, you know, and however I can do my job to the best of my ability to help the team, you know, what can I do to help the team? That's kind of what it always goes back to. And at the end of the day, like, to answer that question, is just do your job to the best of your ability. So it's not that I'm doing anything special. I'm just trying to pay attention to the details of what is my job, what is being asked of me to do, and then going above and beyond it doing that, you know. But yeah, you definitely have those moments where it's like, I definitely smile and I'm like, man, like, feels good to know that all the hard work is paying off, you know. It's I've done all these drills, done all these things, put all this time in, and then to see, okay, you're getting out there and you're making plays at crucial points in the game, it's definitely a great feeling. But at the end of the day, like I said, it's just doing your job and trusting God too. Like, I pray hard, like, all the time, but especially pregame, just for one, the safety of myself and my teammates, but also just to keep me calm, not let me let the moment get too big, or just not let me get too high or too low, whatever, you know, just to be able to be myself, have fun, enjoy the game, and play fast, play aggressive, and do my job, you know. And even just remembering a job, because at times you're so much stuff's going on, you're like, oh, what am I supposed to do? Like, just that I can remember it, you know. So that's the biggest thing for me, just executing my job, you know, and whatever is being asked of me. Because we have, especially on road games, you have 74 people. I have 73 people that are doing their job, and my job is to make sure the team has a fighting chance on a special team. So, you know, that's what I try to do.
Well, congratulations, man. It's really inspiring.
Appreciate it.
It's great to hear. Listen, I want to give you an opportunity to talk about the camp this summer and everything you were doing with that. So, you know, what can you tell people about, you know, the camp you did? Are you going to do any more of these, or what, you know?
Absolutely. That whole thing. Yeah. So, yeah, the camp, it actually came out of me seeing a rise in gun violence in Champaign-Urbana. And I live in the community, so there was actually gun violence going on by my house as well. And just seeing the stuff going on, it made me want to do something. And something that I do on a daily basis is play football, you know. And I know a lot of kids in the community look up to the university and look up to the athletes at the university, you know. And personally, I feel like there's a disconnect between the community and the university itself. So I kind of wanted to do something to just get us out there, you know, to be able to bridge that gap a little bit between the university and the community, and just give those kids something else to look at, you know. Because I personally had two wonderful parents that exposed me to a lot of good things and fought hard to make sure they put us in different situations, you know. So I got to see a different life. So I've always just thought differently about life. But I've also had a lot of friends and people that I've been around and lost a lot of friends and people that I've been around that didn't see that, didn't have those experiences, didn't know what that other life looked like. And it took them down the wrong path, you know, and some of them cost them their life at young ages, 15, 17, 16 years old. And if I can do something to help save at least one person, you know, then that's what I care about, you know, because at the end of the day, like, you play football, but you play football for what? There's a purpose behind everybody doing this, you know? And for me, it's to get a platform to be able to help people, whether that's getting a platform and getting connections to people to put myself in a situation where I have the resources to help people, or that's having a platform where people will listen to me when I'm talking to them. So they'll understand, like, that they'll have a different level of, what's the word I'm looking for? Like a different level of, like, I'll have a different level of influence on them when I talk to them. So I can really just get their ear, you know, so that when I'm speaking, whatever I'm saying, like, actually resonates with them. So that's part of the reason I play this game. It's not just about trying to get to the NFL and get a bunch of money. It's not about that for me. It's about getting a platform to be able to help people. Obviously, like, I want to change my family's life too. But yeah, so the camp just kind of sparked from that, like, that passion. I want to help people, and then seeing a need in the community and something I could do was football. So I had tried to plan it earlier, had a lot of, like, rejections from it at first, but then I had people like Liz Reyes and Mark Torsani fighting hard for it, the university, and just finding loopholes for me to be able to do it. And then it was hard because, like, NIL and everything being passed, and this is new territory, but I was like, I'm not trying to do this for money. I'm doing this for free. Yep. So that actually opened up a lot of doors as well. So doing that, when I started getting in the community and talking to people about it, and they were like, you know, at the time, I'm like, bro, people don't know who I am. They're going to be like, bro, who is this guy? You know, does he even actually play for the university, you know? But when I started taking it to different, like, the Boys and Girls Club, and I'm taking it to Champaign Parks and Recs, everybody was like, yes, let's do this. Like, whatever you need, we're going to get it to the kids and get it out in the community for you. The news stations, WCIA, you guys, we're definitely a lot of help in getting the word out there for it as well. So getting out there and having a turnout of almost 200 kids was amazing. It was crazy to see it all come to fruition in 2 weeks, you know, because I had 2 weeks to plan everything, get advertised, plan it, and get everything out there. And then all the volunteers, the guys on the team, the staff that came from the university, from the student athlete development department that came out there and just volunteered their time. Everybody was super appreciated because I wouldn't have been able to do it all by myself, you know. So it was awesome. I definitely am going to do it again next summer. I may do something in the winter. We'll see. I have to work through some stuff with that, but and then weather as well. So if I can get into the indoor facility, I'd definitely like to do something. Might be a little different than a football camp, though. Might be something more fun for the kids. You know, I'm trying to figure out what they want to do, but next summer I'll definitely be doing the orange and blue camp again.
Sure, sure. Well, listen, I know I don't want to keep you too long because I know you got class coming up. The grind never stops. Never. Practice all day and class in the afternoon and everything else. So I just wanted to thank you. You know, thanks for representing the university like you do, and you know, thank you for telling me your story. It's really, really inspirational.
I appreciate you giving me the time to be able to share my story.
You got it. Well, good. I know the season's not over. Good luck in these next two games. And
yes, sir.
We'll talk to you soon.
All right. Take care, Robert.
All right. You too.
Okay, so we're not done yet. After having that conversation, we had an opportunity on the media Zoom to talk to Brett Bielema, and I wanted to ask him about Talon. And so I asked him a few questions. So we're going to end with this. This is just the audio from that press conference, my two questions, and you'll want to stick around to the end for the story about the baby. As soon as we're done with this, that'll be it. So thanks, Go Illini, and really excited to tell Talon's story because it's just so great. Here we go. Talon, let's see. You know, somebody you put on scholarship in April, you bring him back in these two road wins. He's the one who jumps on the muff punt at Penn State with 30 seconds to go. And then at Minnesota, he's the one downing the punt at the one. So can you talk about what it means to have, you know, he's just a special teams guy so far, but, you know, to have a special teams guy make two plays like that.
Yeah, Robert. And actually he was, you know, a guy first day at camp, we would have had him there the whole time. He unfortunately had a soft tissue leg injury that kept him out several weeks. He's been impressive to me, literally in the first meeting that I visited with him. You know, I haven't seen any of these guys on the field yet. I just got to know him a little bit, and he's got three key ingredients, right? He's got the awareness. Just, he's a very aware young man. Like, when, I don't care if it's about, you know, the summer camps he put on, or if it's about NIL, or if it's about academics, or just life in general, he's very aware. Second thing, he's got incredibly high IQ, right? Like, his emotional intelligence, his ability to process, learn, and evaluate is exceptionally high. And the third thing that he's got a really high drive for success, right? Like, he may not be the most talented player, maybe the highest or the fastest 40, but he's going to find a way to get it done. He's running just as fast as those other guys that are trying to cover him. He's playing just as physical as the other guys that maybe can run and jump a little higher. He reminds me a lot of a former player of mine here, Kevin Richardson, that's with me on staff. Kevin was probably one of the most intelligent, aware football players I've ever coached, and Talon fits the bill of a lot of those same categories.
And as a, you know, similar to your story, you know, start as a walk-on, move to scholarship. How important is that in your program, you know, for the first year to have a guy like that went to scholarship?
I guess I'm probably always going to pull for those guys just because of the road that I walked. But I'll go back to my first meeting, right? Never had a baby in a meeting before, right? But I look in the front row and Talon's sitting there with a baby, and I'm saying to myself, holy cow, I got a baby in the room, right? Like, I had never really, been in that moment before. I felt like seen from Hangover, right? Like, you know, suddenly there's a baby in the room. And I go back to that moment because it really kind of gave me a moment of, okay, as a head coach, I need to get out of my comfort zone, right? Like, the reason he had a child in the room with him is because there was no one else for that baby to go to. He couldn't afford babysitting. And the baby's mother was working. So, like, I mean, like, it was just awesome for me to have that moment to realize just because I haven't done something isn't something that we can't ever do, right? And we worked through that, worked with him on different avenues. And again, as a coach, there are so many things I've learned from our players here since I came here that I just can't even begin to describe. I'm so thankful that they've taught me, right? And I know I've been able to hopefully teach them some things, but I think that's the great thing about being here right now with our players is it's a two-way street. We're learning from them, they're learning from us, and hopefully good things continue to happen.
Thanks.
Yep.